Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Your home for truth in broadcasting.
Now, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, happy Friday. TGIF, Shabbat Shalom, Jabamur Maburik. It's a beautiful day. Tomorrow, Louise and I are heading to Denmark. We will be doing our show all next week from the studios of Danish National Radio. Interviewing, among other people, the professor who conducted the study that was reported on by 60 Minutes and media all over the place about how the Danes are the happiest people in the world. We're going to have a number of members of the Danish parliament and government talking about what does democratic socialism mean, how does it work in Scandinavia, what are the lessons that Denmark has that America can learn from. So next week is going to be a very, very interesting week for us. Of course, on Friday of next week, we'll be back here again with Bernie, although I'll be in Denmark. Bernie will be in either Washington or Vermont. But Bernie Sanders, welcome to the show.
Great to be with you, Tom, and good luck on your trip to Denmark. It is
a beautiful country. Thank you. Yeah, it's our Brunch with Bernie segment, as it is every Friday. Senator Bernie Sanders, sanders.senate.gov, his website, our phone number. Bernie will be taking your calls right after the first break. Our phone number, 866-303-2270, your opportunity to ask a United States Senator anything that's on your mind. Bernie, what's on your mind today?
Well, what's on the mind of my constituents, and I expect people all over this country, is the outrageously high price of gas and oil and the whole energy situation, which clearly needs to move in a very different direction for a number of reasons. What I could tell you, Tom, is about 6 weeks or so, we asked Vermonters to tell me what was going on in their lives economically, and we ended up getting, I think, something like 600 responses, and they were just overpowering in terms of the pain that people are feeling. And I think it's clearly not just Vermont; it's all over this country. Mm-hmm. We're seeing a collapse of the middle class, and I think these high gas and oil prices and high food prices are just taking people who were struggling and just making it, taking them over the edge right now, and there's a lot of despair out there. Meanwhile, while the middle class collapses and poverty increases, the people on top are making out like bandits. And when you go to Denmark, one of the things you'll certainly find out is that their distribution of wealth and income is in a very, very different nature than it is in the United States, a far more egalitarian society. So I think the first point to be made is that people are hurting. They're hurting very badly, and they're really frightened about the future. Certainly in cold weather states, there are millions of people who are worried about how they're going to be able to heat their homes. Workers all over this country are having a hard time filling up their gas tank, getting to work. So that's one issue. In terms of energy, it is not just the immediate crisis. We have to obviously break our dependency on foreign oil, which is one of the reasons we have a huge trade deficit and causing us all kinds of geopolitical problems, i.e. the war in Iraq, etc. Now, here's some really good news. I'm going to be going out in early July to New Mexico to go to a national laboratory there, Sandia Laboratory. And these guys are making some real progress, and there's really on-the-line plans right now to be building, among other things, solar thermal plants in the southwest in this country, which can be producing a significant part of the electrical needs of this country. There was a conference in Washington, D.C. last week where we heard from automobile manufacturers, many of them, and engineers, about hybrid plug-ins, which can get 150 miles per gallon. T. Boone Pickens, remember old T. Boone?
Oh, yeah.
The oil guy? Well,
yeah.
He's now into wind. And he was before my committee, the committee that I'm on, the Energy Committee, the other day, talking, you know, just about the enormous potential of wind in this country.
Yeah.
So short term, We have got to protect the American middle class and working families and fight to lower the cost of gas and oil. I think the areas that we are looking at, some of us are looking at, are twofold. Number one, there's a lot of evidence out there about speculation in oil futures. And there are energy economists who are telling us that the price of a barrel of oil is being inflated by 25% to 50% because of this speculation. And the issue of energy speculation certainly is not anything new to the American people. We know about Enron manipulating the electrical situation in the West Coast. We know about BP manipulating propane gas and being fined $300 million for that. We know about Amaranth, which was a hedge fund company which eventually collapsed, getting a market and control over natural gas some years ago as well. So these are not new ideas that you have speculators taking over markets and driving prices artificially high. Number of pieces of legislation out there. My job is to try to push this thing forward, get it to the floor, get it on the floor. Needless to say, the hedge funds and the financial institutions, Goldman Sachs and these other guys, are fighting back vigorously. Okay. But that's one direction that we've got to go in.
That's absolutely great. The thing that's at the top of my list for today, I'd love to bounce this off you, is that it looks like the House and Senate leadership of the Democrats, is Steny Hoyer leading the charge, apparently, and Ellen Ratner told us yesterday that the telco companies are just carpet bombing members of the House of Representatives with campaign contributions. That they are preparing to give the Bush administration the immunity that they want, the telco companies the immunity they want, and give the Bush administration the right to spy on Americans. I mean, this is it appears absolutely horrific piece of legislation.
Right. I haven't seen the details here, but that is my understanding. It has not come to the floor yet. You know, obviously, as I've said many, many times on this show, we have a president who clearly does not understand the Constitution of the United States, and under the guise of fighting terrorism, he thinks he could do anything to anybody at any time.
But apparently we have a Democratic Party now that feels
right.
The same way.
Well, we got some that's not good news, and and some of us will be, I'm sure, in strong opposition to that. And the problem here is not only the widespread spying on Americans. What it tells the telephone companies and the private sector in general is if a president asks you to do something and it is illegal and it is unconstitutional and you do it, you can get immunity.
Well, you know, as Richard Nixon said,
when the president does it, that means that it is not illegal.
Right.
That's right. That's the point. And that's a terrible precedent. It is illegal. Yes. And at least I think it was Quest. Telephone company understood that it was illegal, and
right.
Legal people said, don't do it.
Right.
But Verizon and other ones went ahead, and if you go ahead and you break the law, you know, you have to pay the price.
Right, and it's not like these telephone companies, telco companies, didn't have armies of lawyers
that's
to
right.
advise
them. Believe me, they have armies of lawyers. So that is a big issue, and what has also been discussed this week, not on my committee, I'm not on the committee, but the whole issue of torture. And a study, as you know, came out documenting the damage done. And all of these things, not only impacts us as Americans, but perhaps even more importantly, it impacts our standing in the entire world. And whether we are capable of being an international leader when we engage in torture, when we engage in wiretapping. And then when we go and tell the world, we want you to be come free and democratic countries, and they look at us and their eyes roll, and they say, well, yeah, right. You know, good speech, but that's not the reality of what's going on in your country. So, you know, which takes us, obviously, to the fact that we're going to have an election of enormous consequence in a few months. And the issue really is on the issue of civil liberties, on the issue of energy, on the issue of health care, on the issue of the war in Iraq, whether we continue four more years of what I think history will record as perhaps certainly the worst administration in the modern history of America and one of the worst in American histories, or will we begin moving in a new direction. And I am not unoptimistic about the future of this country because, among other things, I sit on the Budget Committee. And I can tell you that when we're spending $12 billion every single month on the war in Iraq, when we are giving hundreds of billions of dollars in tax breaks to the richest 1%, when we're wasting huge amounts of money in the military and in other programs that a good administration would be able to end the waste. We can start investing in our kids, in our infrastructure, in sustainable energy. We can create a national health care. You're going to Denmark. Well, let me tell you something. In Denmark, all of their people, as is the case in virtually every country in Europe and Scandinavia, they all have health care. And the quality of health care is good. They're probably spending one half of what we spend per person in the United States. Can we do it? Yeah, we can do it. We're different than Denmark. We're a lot bigger, more diverse, more problems. We can do it. We can create millions of jobs moving into solar. I'm very excited about the potential of solar energy, both photovoltaics as well as solar thermal plants. Wind is just extraordinary. Geothermal is sitting out there. My state, we have potential for a lot of biomass. So there's a lot to look forward to if we have an administration that'll lead us in a way that represents the needs of ordinary Americans.
Amen. It's Senator Bernie Sanders, our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Bernie will be taking your calls right after this short commercial break. It's 16 minutes past the hour, 866-303-2270, our telephone number, TomHartman.com, AirAmerica.com, Sanders.Senate.gov.
Tom Hartman.
Defending America from the weapons of mass deception.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Tom Hartman Program, brought to you in part by the Teamsters, fighting to stop the unfair trade deal with Colombia. Find out more at Teamster, singular, Teamster.org. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Senator Bernie Sanders, the longest-serving member, independent member of the House of Representatives, now the independent from Vermont serving in the United States Senate, neither a Democrat nor a Republican. His website, sanders.senate.gov. Bernie, pick up some phone calls here.
Let's do it, Tom.
Okay, Tony in Ventura, Florida, listening on Winds. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hello, Mr. Sanders.
Hi, Tony.
It's a real pleasure to talk to you, sir. I want to thank you for everything you're doing for the American people.
Thank you.
But it's interesting. I was going to call anyway today, but since you're talking about gas prices, I was wondering when Congress is going to demand the release of the minutes of the secret energy meetings that Cheney had at the beginning of their administration.
Well, Tony, that is an excellent question. Congress, in fact, has demanded this. It's been to the courts and back and around the block many, many times. In case viewers and listeners don't know what Tony is talking about, when the Bush administration first came in, Vice President Cheney sat down with representatives Big Energy to talk about the future energy plans, and they have fought vigorously. The Bush administration has fought vigorously to make sure that the minutes of those meetings were never made public. But I think what is clear to my mind is whatever was discussed in those secret meetings certainly has worked out very, very well for the oil industry. Because since Bush has been president, the oil companies have made some $600 billion in profits and are making record-breaking levels of profits today. But Tony's point is well taken. I think what you had is people sitting down in secret planning out an energy strategy, and that strategy certainly has worked for big oil. Unfortunately, it has been a disaster for the average American.
Yeah. Frank in Phoenix, Arizona, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Sanders. I was just wanting to talk about the FISA bill today. If somebody in the Senate doesn't do their Mr. Smith duty and filibuster this, they should all feel ashamed on this. Feingold's against this, he should filibuster. I understand that they'll probably have over 60 votes for this, but still, somebody should try to at least do tricks or whatever that Republicans use to do something to stop this. When Republicans call this a compromise, you know it's not, because they consider compromising date rape. You know, they somehow been able to put lipstick on a pig on this darn bill. You know, I don't know, Mr. Sanders. I'm giving up hope on Democrats. I know you're not a Democrat, but, you know, this is bad.
Okay. Frank, I think there are many people in this country who share your sentiment. I have not been involved yet. I don't know that there have been discussions about the strategy and how to oppose this yet.
Right. It doesn't go to the Senate until next week. It's in the House today.
Right.
And in all probability, it's going to be voted on in the House today. And I've already called my representative, Congresswoman Darlene Hooley's office, and expressed my outrage and asked how she's going to vote. And they said they didn't know, or they weren't going to tell me, which I thought was rather startling. So anyway, I encourage everybody, you can call congress.org, call your member of the House of Representatives. Beth in Minneapolis, Minnesota, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Thanks very much. You touched on something that's been on my mind, for about 8 years. You know, you can find some evidence from the Cheney Energy meetings if you go to the archives of judicialwatch.org, because through the Freedom of Information Act, early in the administration, they were able to get copies of maps that Cheney used in his meetings that show the locations of different oil fields in Iraq. And now we've come full circle. They started out with these meetings to divide up the country, and here we have, after 8 years, the divisions are being handed out with no bid contracts to the oil companies. And I feel that everything in that, if you look at everything that's happened to us in that context, the pieces all fit together. And that's why McCain said our army can be there for 100 years. Well, we're there to protect the oil fields, and we are no longer a representative democracy. We are a country that is owned by the oil companies. And do you see a way to throw this yoke off? You know,
well, I do. And I mean, the way to do it, obviously, is to elect the president who's not going to continue Bush's disastrous policies. But second of all, and I can't emphasize this strongly enough, if we move this country toward energy efficiency, and that means getting cars on the road, and we have the prototypes out there right now, they get 150 miles per gallon plug-in hybrids. There are electric cars out there that have ranges of over 200
Toyota
miles.
Now has a hydrogen car actually in production.
I'm sorry, who does?
Toyota. Honda. They're selling it in Japan.
They're waiting to happen, and we've got to make it happen.
Yeah.
And I mentioned before the potential of solar, wind, geothermal, biomass. We can do this. We can do it in a short period of time, and we're not going to have to worry about importing oil from the Mideast.
From your lips to God's ears. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. Brunch with Bernie, 866-303-2270, TomHartman.com, AirAmerica.com, Sanders.Senate.gov.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Call Tom at 8664 minutes
past the hour. The Tom Hartman Program. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour. Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us this entire hour, taking your calls. 866-303-2270. Michael in Los Angeles, listening on K-Talk. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, Mr. Sanders, you constantly rip down the Republicans, saying that all the woes of the United States is because of the Republicans. What is your opinion? Why is this gutless Congress passing the appropriation bill to fund the war that they approved of it with Bush's ratings so low in the his ratings and also with his FISA Act. What's your opinion on the gutless Democrats in that, in this situation?
Well, let me just say, make a couple of points here. I am an independent, and what I think, and I've never been a Democrat or a Republican. In fact, I came, my first electoral victory was in 1981 when I defeated a Democrat for mayor of the city of Burlington, where I live. I think what you have right now in the Congress is an extreme right-wing party, a party that has moved over the years to the real right wing with Bush and the Republicans. That's reality. And then you have the Democrats, a centrist party, which has some progressive members in it and some conservative members, some centrist, and some people who are somewhere in the middle. If you're asking, do I think that the Democratic Party today vigorously represents the needs of working families and is prepared to stand up to the big money interests who have so much power over our country? I think the answer is obviously no, they don't. Are they much, much better than the Republicans? The answer is yes, they are. The other thing you have to understand when we critique the Democrats, and I think the Democrats should be critiqued, you have to understand they have a 51-49 majority in the Senate, which includes Senator Lieberman, by the way, who votes with who is an independent Democrat who votes with the Republicans on foreign policy issues. So in that instance, they don't have a majority at all. Second of all, what you have to appreciate is that to get significant legislation passed in the Senate, it requires 60 votes. And when you hear about votes going on, whether it's trying to extend tax credits for wind and solar and sustainable energy, we get 55 or 53 or 58. We have a majority. We don't have the 60 to end debate. There have been relatively few votes on the war in Iraq. What you have had is an effort to end debate. And in some instances, we have tried early on to bring the troops home. We don't have the votes to do it. And if we did, Bush would veto it. So I think it is fair to say, and I would join the critique in saying that Democrats have not been strong enough, A, in standing up to the big money interest in this country, and B, telling the Republicans, who, by the way, have now exercised, if my memory is correct, something like 75 filibusters, which is far more than any at any time in the history of the Senate, that, in my view, what the Democrats should say, you want a filibuster? Go right ahead. We're going to spend Saturday, Sunday, Monday. We're going to be here 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, and we will debate Iraq. We'll debate FISA. We'll debate why you want to give tax breaks to billionaires when the middle class is collapsing. I think that is an appropriate strategy. So that is the political dynamic that I see. But while you beat up on the Democrats, which is fine, do not miss the main point. That you have the worst president in the history, modern history of the United States in the White House prepared to veto any substantive legislation, and that you have right-wing extremists controlling the Republican Party in the House and Senate.
Ben in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hi, Senator Sanders. Has anyone in Congress considered a bill that would prevent presidents from granting pardons in November, December, or January of any year?
Not that I know of. I don't. When he is leaving office.
Right. After the election, but before the inauguration.
That's an interesting idea. Ben, I'm honestly not familiar with any legislation to that effect.
Okay. Chris in Bellingham, Washington. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Is that Chris?
That's Chris. That's you.
Hi. I'm so excited to get through. Senator Sanders, I want to talk about single-payer health care, and specifically there's a bill in the House, which I know you're aware of, H.R. 676, the National Health Insurance Act, and why we can't get a companion bill in the Senate. You know, I've been an activist on this issue for about 4 years. Personally, myself, this year, I'm probably going to spend $6,000 on health care. I'm someone who doesn't even own their own home. You know, if I wasn't paying this much money on health care, I could probably buy one of those Saturn hybrid cars that you're talking about, you know?
That we advertise.
I mean,
okay, Chris, let me say a couple of words on, and thanks very much for that important question. You know, we are focusing right now on the dramatic and outrageous increases in oil and gas, and we've got to focus on that. But we can't forget some of the other major crises facing millions of Americans, and the disintegration of our health care system is certainly one. I happen to agree with Chris. I believe in a single-payer system. I suspect the bill she's talking about is John Conyers' bill in the House. And when I was in the House, if my memory is correct, I was supporting that bill. The reason I haven't introduced it in the Senate is, in a sense, it's really futile. There would be very, very few other senators who would go along. And what I have introduced, given the political climate that we're currently operating under, is another piece of legislation that would allow the federal government to provide financial assistance and waivers to those states who wanted to go forward with universal health care, including a single payer. My own view is the single payer.
Let the states do it. Interesting. Let the states do it.
Let the states do it.
And be incubators.
Where we are right now is there's no way on God's earth we are going to pass a single payer. And I thought that from at this moment, politically, that was probably the best approach. I believe in a single payer. I think our health care system right now is just falling apart at the seams. It's not only that 47 million have no health insurance, that more are underinsured. The costs are outrageously high, getting higher every day. And you know what, Tom? We don't even have enough primary health care physicians in this country. We're not even producing them.
Yeah.
Because the money to be made is with specialties. So you have all these specialists in the big cities, rural America, and urban areas. We don't have the primary health care physicians. My office is working very hard with some success in putting money into what we call community health centers all over this country. We're trying to get dentists into underserved areas. We're trying to significantly increase funding for what's called the National Health Service Corps, which provides scholarships and debt forgiveness for those people, those physicians who want to serve in underserved areas. Bottom line here is we spend at least twice as much per person on health care as any other country, and yet we have 47 million uninsured. Costs are soaring. Quality is not competitive with many other countries, as a matter of fact. So Chris is absolutely right. We need radical changes. We need to get the private insurance companies and the profiteers out of health care. We need to provide quality, cost-effective health care to all people. We can do it. But it's going to take a lot of work taking on the insurance companies, the drug companies, and a lot of these big money interests.
Indeed. Susan in Oakland Park, Florida. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Good morning, Tom. Good afternoon, Senator Sanders.
Thank you.
I'd like you to address the cost of living index, which is so important to Social Security recipients and others, that excludes the cost of food, excludes the cost of gas. I don't know what else it excludes, but obviously the 2% increase for this year and in past several years is nowhere near the actual cost of living.
Right. Susan is absolutely right, and she is right in suggesting this impacts seniors on Social Security disproportionately. What we tried to do in the House was come up with a different index for seniors for this reason. You know, if you are an 18-year-old kid and you want to buy a laptop computer, the truth is you can get a good laptop today for significantly less than you could 5 years ago.
Right, and they include that calculation in the cost of living index.
That's right.
Right, and so,
So that's included, but the issue is most 70-year-olds now today, low-income 70-year-olds are not racing out to buy a laptop computer. What they are buying is health care. They're buying prescription drugs. They're buying food. So to make a good index that is relevant to older people, you got to look at what the products are that they are buying. And if you do that, you will find pretty consistently that because often it's related to health care costs, their needs and costs are higher than the general population. So what we fought for was, and had a lot of support, didn't get passed, is a special index for seniors looking at those issues and those areas that they're spending their money.
Okay. Linda in Cleveland, Ohio. We have a minute before the break, Linda. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
I'm expecting a spate of frivolous and wrongful indictments of Democrats around the country this summer, as in the Don Siegelman recently and in the Kathleen Kennedy Townsend in 2004 in Maryland. And this is directly because of the U.S. attorney firings and the politicization of the what I would call the lack of Justice Department. What is being done about this in the Senate now?
Well, I know that Tom has done a lot of work on you've interviewed the
we have had Don Siegelman on for about an hour about every second or third week now for a couple of months. Yeah.
Well, and I to say the least, there is a lot of attention on that issue. and the politicalization of the U.S. Attorney's Office. No question about that.
Yeah. Is anybody in the Senate holding hearings on this, or is this, I know the House is looking into this.
You know, I can't, there's so many hearings taking place, Tom.
That would have to be probably Pat Leahy's Judiciary Committee, I would assume. Would have oversight.
I don't. It could be in a number of years.
Okay. All righty.
Just don't know the answer to that.
Thank you, Bernie. 45 minutes past the hour. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Senator Bernie Sanders taking your calls here on the Tom Hartman Program. 866-303-2270. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Tom Hartman.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman Program, our Brunch with Bernie Hour, Senator Bernie Sanders, his website, sanders.senate.gov. Great newsletter over there.
By the way, Tom, before we take more questions,
sure, Bernie.
I did want to mention one development of this week, which I think should be of interest to a whole lot of people, especially veterans. The president indicated, because there's massive support for it, he originally opposed it, legislation that would provide a new GI educational bill to all the post 9/11 veterans, guys who served in Iraq and Afghanistan, the women who served there. And this will be similar in many ways to the original GI educational bill out of World War II. And this will be a huge shot in the arm, I think, for large numbers of people who served who can't afford to go to college or to graduate school. I think it's great for the soldiers. It'll be really great for our economy. So we've made some good progress on that, and I think that bill will become a law in the not-too-distant future.
Yeah, it's so funny to see Bush now taking credit for it.
Yeah,
McCain.
He opposed it. Actually, Senator John Warner, Republican from Virginia, was very good, who has been very active in this, was very good on the floor yesterday making that point.
Good, good. Thank you. Greg in Scranton, Pennsylvania, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Senator Sanders, as the son of a retired Jersey City fireman, I'd like to thank you so much for the conference you had the other day for first responders.
Thank you, Greg. That was a great conference.
Also, and for working people throughout the country here. Senator Sanders, what do you do? How much do hedge fund people make off of our $4 at the pump right now, do you think?
Well, Greg, one of the things is we just don't know, because so much of what they do is in secret. What we do know is that hedge fund managers, in some cases, are making billions of dollars for themselves. We know that hedge funds are playing a greater and greater role in our economy, controlling more and more of the capital that is being distributed all over this country, being spent all over this country and invested all over the world. What we are trying to do is to get a handle on this by re-regulating energy markets, which were deregulated in the year 2000, so that we could, in fact, answer your question, Greg. My guess is that these hedge funds and Goldman Sachs and these other large financial institutions are making billions, driving up the price of oil and gas.
Yeah. Apparently, Morgan Stanley is now the largest holder of oil in the United States.
Oil futures,
is it?
I think it's heating oil, actually.
Yeah.
And that is obviously impacts my state and much of New England, and it's an issue we want to get a handle on.
Yeah. Dave in Detroit, listening on WDTW. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hello. Yeah, hi. This is Dave. First, I'd like to say, if only Obama had the wisdom for us to say Vice President Bernie Sanders.
Amen.
Thank you. That, well, yeah, wonderful. I'd like to make a quick statement about the FISA and wiretapping and telecom situation. There's been a lot of disappointments these past 8-10 years, and if the Democrats go along with this, it'll be maybe one of the biggest disappointments. They're not listening. They didn't listen to the last election. And I'd like to know, as a citizen, if we can go break the law and then have laws changed to protect us. Yeah. The other thing is, Mr. Sanders, 2 days ago there was a report that came out. I think it was a general about the Guantanamo issue. And
Antonio Taguba, the guy who investigated Abu Ghraib.
Correct. Right. And I guess through interviews and physical examinations, they have determined, I guess without doubt, that these detainees were, in fact, indeed tortured. Is this part of an ongoing investigation? Or
yeah, it is. Actually, I think that, Dave, I'm not 100% sure, but I think that that may have come out in connection with a hearing, I believe, in the Senate Armed Forces Committee under Senate 11 of Michigan, which certainly tried to get a handle on who made the orders regarding torture in the chain of command. But as I mentioned earlier, when you have the United States of America, our great country, engaged in torture, it is not only a stain on us, but it so negatively impacts our standing in the entire world and lessens our capability of being leaders in the fight against terrorism and on all other things. So it is something that has got to be addressed. This country should not be involved in torture, period.
David, in Florida, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yes, Senator, thank you for taking my call. I'm a combat Korean War veteran, and I live in Florida. And all of the things that you discussed today are really very important, but we've left out the most important thing. How do we get... I worked for Kerry in 04, and I saw people turned away before my eyes arbitrarily because their names matched somebody's other names who had felony records. All of the things you discussed today, very important. But the most important thing is how do we get in Florida, a swing state, the people that want to vote for Obama and are being will be denied unless something is done about it, because the future of this country and the Supreme Court, as we both know, depends upon Obama winning.
So Dave raises a very important issue, and a lot of that stuff is going to have to be dealt with state by state by state. Certainly we know that in the year 2000, one of the goals and successful efforts of the Republican Party took place long before the hanging chads and long before the votes were counted, and that is a voter suppression of getting a whole lot of people, including mostly minorities, off of the voting rolls. And what we know today, in state after state, they are continuing that effort under the guise of so-called voter fraud, demanding that people have photo IDs, and many low-income people and senior citizens may not have these government IDs. So this is an issue that I know the Democrats are very, very concerned about, because they see the potential of hundreds of thousands of low-income and minority people not being able to cast votes. So voter suppression, I think Tom and I have talked about this many, many times, has been the MO of the Republican Party for years. They like small voter turnouts with wealthy white folks voting, and that's their idea of democracy. And some of us believe very much the opposite. We want as large a voter turnout as possible. And David is right. This is an issue that the Democrats are going to have to focus on.
Yeah, you and Thomas Jefferson. That was his issue. Enfranchise as many people as possible. Bernie Sanders, Senator Bernie Sanders from Vermont, sanders.senate.gov, his website. Bernie, thanks so much for taking our calls this hour.
My pleasure, Tom. Talk to you again.
Great talking with you. It's 57 minutes past the hour. Anything goes Friday. We'll take your calls on any topic. Stick around.
Tom Hartman.
Speaking the truth that multinational corporations don't want you to know.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity.
Tom Hartman.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, it looks like, from what I'm seeing, hearing, that Steny Hoyer, you wonder how many campaign contributions this guy is getting from the telco companies or other Democrats are. I mean, what other conceivable reason, other than there being just plain old flat-out rollover prostitutes, could there be for these Democrats to say, yeah, sure, we'll go along with this. We'll give immunity to the telco companies. We'll give immunity to the Bush administration. We'll give George Bush the right to spy on people all he wants. I am, you know, Russ Feingold said this is not a compromise, it's a capitulation. The New York Times editorializing about it, saying this is an assault on the Constitution. But Steny Hoyer's all gung-ho for it. Man, one more reason that I am so glad that we don't do suck-up interviews with big-name politicians so that I can call them out on this kind of stuff. This is terrible. It's, you know, let us hope that this can be blocked in the Senate, that Senator Feingold, Senator Leahy, who have both now spoken out against the FISA bill, perhaps Bernie Sanders, although he's not on the Intelligence Committee, he's not on the relevant committees. If you get a senator who is on one of those committees that would have to do with this legislation, their ability to hold it and their standing and all is dramatically greater. I mean, with Bernie, it would be something having to do with oil or having something to do with the economy or the middle class, and those are the issues that he focuses on mostly in the committees that he's on. But somebody put a hold on this thing when it hits the Senate next week and let the clock run out. Or let's see a filibuster. Let me encourage you to go to callcongress.org right now. We've got a list of a whole bunch of 800 numbers that you can use to call Congress and call your member of the House of Representatives and say, how did you vote on this thing? I just want to know so I can know how I'll vote in November. I mean, do it friendly, right? Do it friendly. How did you vote? So I'll know how I can vote in November. And then call us up and let us know what they had to say. I'd be very interested to hear. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Anything goes Friday. Anything you want to talk about, we'll go for it. Dan in Kalama, Washington?
Yeah, this is Dan.
Hey, Dan, you're on the air.
Kalama, Washington?
Yeah.
Hey, is this Tom?
It is. We're on the air.
Listen, man, I've been listening to you from day one. It's a privilege, et cetera. But I have to tell you that years ago I worked for public health, and when Reagan got into office, essentially what changed was public health on the local level could go into a grocery store, take a meat sample, take it back, do a vaccine on it. If it showed up positive, the local health department could abort their meats, et cetera.
Right, basically shut them down, you mean, right then and there.
Right then and there. And yeah. It really angered the grocery store industry so much. They lobbied so hard that Reagan changed everything, where half the state level inspectors of meats, et cetera, were not allowed to go out and inspect like they should. Mm-hmm. In addition to that, local health departments no longer do any kind of inspection of grocery stores. It's been a nightmare ever since. And, E. coli is so bad. My daughter got it in D.C. 4 or 5 years ago. It took her 4 years to recover, Tom.
Yeah, this H147 strain, I think it is, can cause kidney failure. I mean, it kills people.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, it started to work on her kidneys, et cetera. The fact that she was like 24 years old and managed to get some sort of heavy-duty antibiotics to really aid her helped immensely. But it took 4 years for her to get over that. And it's a big concern to me, man. I think the public needs to be aware of what's really going on out there. Call their local health department. And if you ever get sick, the first thing you do is if you have diarrhea, you take a sample of that feces and take it down to a lab and have a vaccine done on it. That will tell the story. The health department can trace it back to wherever.
Yeah. Okay. Dan, thanks a lot for the heads up and sharing your story. The bottom line of the story, it all began with Reagan. Once more, it all began with Reagan. That needs to be our mantra.
I've always felt the 9 most terrifying words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
Yeah, tell that to somebody dying of E. coli or of salmonella or of drowning in the Midwest. Incredible. Justin in Seattle. Hey, Justin, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. I was wondering, does the FISA bill give immunity to contractors who operated inside the U.S.?
I don't know.
Guantanamo, but you don't hear about anti-terror interrogations of U.S. citizens.
I think the FISA bill simply has to do with spying, since it has to do with the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, which is about spying, listening in on our phone calls. And, you know, let's keep in mind, the current FISA law is the old FISA law, which has this three-day period. You can, they can go off and spy on anybody they want, anytime they want. They just have to, within 3 days, go to the special emergency FISA court and say, by the way, this is what we're doing. And the court, you know, 99.9% of the time says, fine, no problem, you know, but these guys, no, this isn't good enough for them. They want to go around the Fourth Amendment. This is, you know, Jonathan Turley last night on Keith Olbermann's show Countdown, he said, this is the evisceration of the Fourth Amendment. Evisceration is a fancy polysyllabic word, which means disemboweling, cutting the guts out. This is, you know, sticking a knife in the stomach and cutting whip, so that the intestines fall out on the ground. That's evisceration. That's what they're doing to the Fourth Amendment, according to constitutional scholars. Whether it's going to affect Blackwater or other contractors, Justin, I don't know. It's something we all need to be looking at. But, you know, I appreciate the call and thanks for bringing it up. It's amazing. Eddie in Portland. Hey, Eddie.
Oh, hi, Tom. How are you?
Good. What's up?
I have heard some of your callers ask how much money these hedge funds are making with these oil prices and their well trading. And, you know, I can tell you one thing or two. I used to be a commodities trader during the early 80s,
mm-hmm.
and I can tell you that the way they make money is by trading volatility. If there's no volatility in the market, there's no money to be made.
Right. So when they go up or when they go down, you can make money. You just have to get them going up and down a lot.
Exactly, and you know, to make it more complex, they used to trade the beta, which is the figure that measures volatility.
Right.
And then they go more into depth, and they trade the change in volatility, which is traded under the name of delta. And what they do is that they buy out of the money options, and they sell at the money options, and they create that volatility, which is the way that they can really make money.
Right, so they churn the market, and then they skim out of all that churn. And then on top of that, at the retail level, you got all the brokerage houses, you got all the you know, small investors who are trying to keep up with it or thinking that they can hop in and make a killing here and there. And you've got all the investment houses and brokerage houses taking a piece of that action in terms of brokerage fees and commissions.
Precisely. So the more volatility, there's in the market, the worse is for us, the consumer, but it's the better for the trader.
Yeah, yeah. Well said. Eddie, thank you very much for the call. Dave in South Florida listening on WINS. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Tom. Listen, in 1960, JFK went before the people and said, before the end of this decade, we will put a man on the moon.
Right.
We hadn't even gotten a rocket to blast off.
Right.
5 years ago, President Bush, on a State of the Union address, said we're going to put national funds behind hydrogen and more fuel efficient cars and everything, and we haven't done a single thing towards that. I mean, if in 1960 we could put a man on the moon, it seems to me in 2000, in the next 4 or 5 years, we could certainly be, you know, have fuel cells and cars much more efficient without needing to drill every other location on the planet.
Yeah, you would certainly think
so. The energy
crisis. Here's Jimmy Carter on this topic.
It is worldwide. It is a clear and present danger to our nation. These are facts, and we simply must face them. What I have to say to you now about energy is simple and vitally important. Point one, I am tonight setting a clear goal for the energy policy of the United States. Beginning this moment, this nation will never use more foreign oil than we did in 1977. Never.
That was in 1979, July 15th. And moreover,
I will soon submit legislation to Congress calling for the creation of this nation's first solar bank, which will help us achieve the crucial goal of 20% of our energy coming from solar power by the year 2000.
And that's the legislation that Ronald Reagan rolled back, that Ronald Reagan got rid of when he came into office. I mean, this is how grim it is and how bad it is. So thank you very much for the call, and you know, well said. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Tom Hartman here with you. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
The Tom Hartman Program, where progressives come to party.
Okay, this FISA legislation just passed. My congresswoman, who I called this morning, Darlene Hooley, and said, please don't vote for this thing, voted no. Good on you, Darlene Hooley. In fact, when you look at the no votes, there were 129 no votes. All of them but one, Johnson from Illinois, are Democrats. So it looks like other than that one Republican, all the rest, there are 13 people who didn't vote, but everyone else, Waxman voted against it, Woolsey voted against it, Wasserman Schultz voted against it. You know, good on these people. Both Sanchez's, Linda and Loretta, Charlie Rangel voted against it. David Obey voted against it. Jerry Nadler voted against it. Dennis Kucinich voted against it. Rush Holt voted against it. I mean, yeah, there's some good names in here, some good people who did the right thing. And you can read the list online, and there's a link off thinkprogress.org. Actually has a very quick link to the votes, to the actual roll call vote. But the yeses, this is astounding. All the Democrats that voted yes on this thing, from Brian Baird to Jane Harmon to Nancy Pelosi to Steny Hoyer, I'm just horrified. I am absolutely horrified. I don't know what to say beyond that. Well, I'll tell you what. The American Civil Liberties Union, this is the ACLU. And this is the director of the ACLU's Washington Legislative Office, Carolyn Frederickson, just issued this statement just moments ago. It's Christmas morning at the White House thanks to this vote. The House just wrapped up some expensive gifts for the administration and their buddies at the phone companies. Watching the House fall to scare tactics and political maneuvering is especially infuriating. The adjective I would use is pathetic, but nonetheless, she says infuriating given the way it stood up to pressure from the president on the same issue just months ago. In March, we thought the House leadership had finally grown a backbone by rejecting the Senate's FISA bill. Now we know that they will not stand up for the Constitution. No matter how often the opposition calls this bill a compromise, it is not a meaningful compromise except in its compromise of our constitutional rights. The bill allows for mass, untargeted, and unwarranted surveillance. That's without warrants. Unwarranted surveillance of all communications coming into and out of the United States. The court's role is superficial at best, as the government has continued spying on our communications even after the FISA court has objected. Democratic leaders turned what should have been an easy FISA fix into the wholesale giveaway of our Fourth Amendment rights. More than 2 years after the president's domestic spying was revealed in the pages of the New York Times, Congress's fury and shock has dissipated into an obedient whimper. After scrambling for years to cover the tracks, the phone companies and the administration are almost there. This immunity provision will effectively destroy Americans' chances to have their deserved day in court and will kill any possibility of learning the extent of this administration's lawless actions. The House should be ashamed of itself. The fate of the Fourth Amendment is now in the Senate's hands. We can only hope senators will show more courage than their colleagues in the House. I can tell you, if my member of the House of Representatives was on this list of shame, this wall of shame, and again, you can find the link. And Sean, can you put that link up on our homepage at TomHartman.com? And if you can't, I'm sure Louise can. We'll get it up there right away. You can see the final vote results for roll call number 437. This is at 12:48 Eastern Time today, FISA Amendments Act of 2008. If my member of Congress, if my member of the House of Representatives was on this list, and there was time for any kind of a challenge in a primary, I would be given the maximum I could to that primary opponent. And I would notify this person that you just kissed away any contributions from me or anybody affiliated with me that I may have any influence over. I mean, this is beyond pathetic. This is wrong. This is absolutely wrong. Virginia in Seattle. Hey, Virginia, we've got a minute here before we got to take a break. What's up?
Well, I was calling to tell you, I called Jim McDermott's office yesterday, and the young man said he didn't think...
McDermott voted no. God bless him.
Right. I expected him to do so, but...
And Jay Inslee voted no as well for right. All of our listeners in Seattle. It's... I am just astounded. I'm astounded.
Well,
that they could
I'm just sick.
Yeah.
I'm 81 years old, and I've never been so disheartened in my life with the politics as I have now. And thanks to you and your cohorts, I knew more about politics, and I've paid more attention to them in the last 4 years that I've been able to listen to your station.
Well, thank you, Virginia, and thank you very much for listening, and thank you for calling Congressman McDermott's office, and thank Jim McDermott. In fact, now is the time to call him back and say thank you for doing the right thing, Congressman. I know it might have cost you contributions from the telco industry. Virginia, thank you for your call. I appreciate it. I've got to take a break here. 27 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman program, 866-303-2270, tomhartman.com. If you want to drop into our live chat room, airamerica.com for the blog there.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman program.
Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Until the Constitution goes down, 6 feet under the ground. Hey, actually, the good news here is that there are 128 Democrats and one Republican in the House of Representatives that are worthy of, if one of them happens to be your member of Congress, that are worthy of a phone call with a thank you. I think it's really important when people do the right thing, particularly when they do the right thing against their own leadership, that we let them know that we appreciate it. And if one of these people who voted no on giving away the Fourth Amendment and giving the Bush administration everything they want, if one of these people who voted no is representing you, then call them up and thank them. I intend to call Congresswoman Hooley's office when I get off the air and thank them for her no vote today, for standing up and doing the right thing. And if she was running for re-election, I would be giving her a contribution right now. She's one of the few who's retiring, but, you know, I'll be giving a contribution to the person who's going to be running for her seat, which is probably the Democrat, which is nearly as good. I I'm not a big fan of the idea of voting with your dollars, because that's not democracy. That means people with the most dollars have the most votes. But I do believe that it's really important to support politicians who are doing the right thing, because if we don't, AT&T will. And that ain't the American dream, I'm telling you. Eric in Maryland. Hey, Eric, welcome to the show. What's up?
Thanks, Tom. I'm disgusted as you are today. I unfortunately live in Congressman Hoyer's district here in Maryland. And I have had the experience, actually, with a group of citizens. We went and visited his office in Greenbelt, Maryland, about 3 weeks ago with a representative from the ACLU. And we're there for about an hour, actually, talking to one of his aides. And we thought it was a very productive meeting. And they weren't committed to anything, but they did certainly listen to us. And said they would follow up with us, and 3 weeks later we never received any word back. Yeah. And then today we find out that he's voted with the Republicans and capitulated to the Bush administration. So I think, you know, it's frustrating because he's actually been a good congressman, but he's been reelected so many times, I think he's out of touch with the people, as many congresspeople are.
Well, he's apparently out of touch with the Constitution. I mean, we're talking about the Constitution of the United States. We're talking about the Fourth Amendment. We're talking about something that people fought and died for
right.
230 years, and he's... Oh, I'm starting to... I nearly got obscene. I almost got an FCC fine there. I will stop at that point.
Well, I did call his office today and talk to, you know, one of his aides, which, of course, is a young person, And I didn't use obscenities, but I was very upset because I knew the vote was coming and what was going to happen because I'd heard from the ACLU about it. And what's frustrating is, you know, again, it seems like when you have representative democracy and when you go in and you have a group of people even that go in and visit with a congressperson or a senator and you think you've made some progress and they're listening to you and then they don't even follow up, they don't listen to you at all, and they capitulate to the Bush administration and to the telecom industry, and it's beyond frustrating and disgusting. I'm a Democrat. I've been a lifelong Democrat. I'm disgusted with him and Mikulski, our senator from Maryland. We're a blue state. She voted with with Bush on this. I don't know where to turn. I mean, I don't know what we do now.
I don't either. Broadly. I mean, you know, if Steny Hoyer was my member of Congress, what I would be doing is it's a little late this year. I'm assuming, you know, your primaries are over and everything.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But I would be over the next 2 years looking very, very carefully for a Democrat who wants to take him on in the primary,
mm-hmm.
and doing everything I could for that. We have got to get rid of these so-called Democrats who don't give a damn about the Constitution, who don't give a damn about the values
right.
of this country, who don't give a damn about what's going on in this country, who roll over as soon as a lobbyist comes along and dangles a $10,000 check in front of them. You know, we just need to throw these bums out on their asses. And if I lived in Steny Hoyer's district, that's what I would be doing. I would also be showing up at the local Democratic Party meeting every single month.
Right.
I would do everything I could to insinuate myself and infiltrate into that organization. I would be, you know, by way of looking for candidates to take him on and by way of passing that information along. And I would be doing everything I could to encourage other members of the House to not vote for this guy in a leadership position again, because, you know, he's the majority leader in the House of Representatives. He's the guy who is the leader, the representative,
yeah.
more so than Nancy Pelosi. She speaks for the whole House. He's the guy who's in charge of all the Democrats. And it's like, Democrats, what are you doing? Somebody who doesn't understand the Fourth Amendment is the leader of the Democratic, of the Democrats
right.
in the House of Representatives. I mean, give me a break. So.
Well, I agree, and I appreciate it. You certainly made me feel better just listening to you today and all the other people who think like us. And even though this may be a loss for us, I think we're growing stronger, realizing that we don't always have allies even in the Democratic Party.
I agree. And what we need to do is turn our emotion, turn our outrage into action and show up and get active. That's really, I mean, you know, wringing our hands and saying, oh, to hell with it, or I'm going to vote for the Republican. That's exactly what the telephone companies and the Bush administration would love for us to do. What they don't want for us to do is to get more active within the party as a result of this kind of a vote. And Eric, thanks a lot for
thanks
the call.
Thanks a lot.
I appreciate it. And thanks for calling your congressman's office, and my condolences that Steny Hoyer is your member of Congress. Amy in San Diego, California. Hey, Amy, what's up?
Oh, hi, Tom. This horrible bill that just passed, and so many other things that you hear going on, like Pelosi telling Conyers that he'd lose his seat if he did the impeachment.
Well, we don't know for sure that
happened. Yeah, but I'm pretty sure, because Conyers was just chomping at the bit before he got back into power, and then nothing as soon as he got in there. So something happened to him. But the reason I called was, you're always saying very optimistically that things have been worse and we'll get through this. But when has it been worse than this?
Oh, there's been a lot of times in our history when it's been worse. So let's do them backwards. During World War I, the Democratic president, Woodrow Wilson, passed a modern version of the Alien and Sedition Acts. And through Eugene Debs, who was simply, you know, the socialist candidate, sometime Democratic, threw him into prison for just speaking out. I mean, they were putting Americans in prison for speaking out against World War One.
Yeah.
So go back before that. Well, let me just run through a couple here real quickly for you, Amy, and then you can rebut me if you'd like. Before that, in the 1880s, 1890s, those decades, really from 1870 through Teddy Roosevelt coming into office, you had the Republican Party had turned itself from the Reform Party that Abe Lincoln had essentially started it as into the party of the railroad barons, and you had the rise of the robber barons in the 1870s, 80s, and 90s, and you had the charter mongering where all the states were changing their charters to allow corporations to do anything they damn well please. Congress votes were being literally bought and sold with cash dollars on the floor of the House and Senate during that era. Corruption was so wild during the Ulysses S. Grant administration, the Republican, that when he wanted to run, he asked his own party if he could run for a third term. They said no. That's how bad it was. And this is one of the most corrupt times and one of the most corrupt parties in the history of America. And then you go back to John Adams, the second president of the United States. He passed the Alien Sedition Act as vice president only because he got, the second largest number of votes was Thomas Jefferson. Jefferson left town that day in protest, and Congress passed that law by one vote. And John Adams threw his political opponents, his newspaper publishers. The first guy he put in jail was Benjamin Franklin Bach, Ben Franklin's grandson, for writing an editorial saying that President Adams was old, toothless, querulous, and balding. I mean, that's why he threw him in prison for 2.5 years. Shut down his newspaper. They shut down 18 of the anti-federalist newspapers, today what you would call Democratic newspapers, big D Democratic. I mean, he's just shut down the opposition. It has been worse, Amy, but we're damn close to the edge.
Yes, it just seems like there's not just one or two things. It's not like it's just this one bill. It's just he is committing so many crimes and that they won't do anything about it. They've politicized the justice.
The Justice Department.
Everything is politicized. It's just like they've infiltrated every area of our government. I just don't see how we can get it back.
We have to change the way money flows in Washington, D.C.
Yes,
and this is why, even though we'll see how he governs, but I think I have some significant economic differences with Barack Obama, for example. I am really impressed by the fact that he is saying, no, I'm not going to take money from the special interests. Instead, we're going to, just take money from people over the internet and that kind of thing. It is the beginning of a change in mindset in Washington, D.C., and I am very hopeful that let's not fool ourselves. This is going to be a long slog, but if Obama becomes president, that there will be a sea change in this country, and that corrupt politicians like Steny Hoyer, who's willing to sell himself, and apparently Nancy Pelosi, willing to sell themselves out to the telecom companies, or trembling at the feet of the Republicans for fear of being called soft on terrorism or some nonsense like that they will be out on their butts, and we will see some significant and progressive changes.
Well, God bless you, Tom, for being so optimistic. I really need your voice because I am just so depressed about all of this. So,
don't get depressed, Amy. Get active. I'm serious.
Yeah, I just finished my 2-year term as being the vice president of my local Democratic club, but it's just
God
like all the
you.
Wind is out of my sails.
Yeah, well, it's great that you've done that, Amy, and thank you so much, and thank you for the call. We've got to take a break here. I appreciate your calling. Thank you. But we really, seriously, I mean, you're depressed about your dog dying. The best advice is get active. Talk about it. This is worse than
Tom Hartman.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Right
like it's a bad thing. I don't know about you, but I was put here to live in love.
9.5 minutes before the hour. Yeah, it was actually, for some of us, pardon my gloating, there's some good news for some of us. Here I am in Portland, Oregon, and every single, we have 5 members of the House of Representatives from this state. 4 of them are Democrats. 1, Greg Walden, is a Republican. He, of course, voted yes on this, FISA give the Bushies and the telco companies what they want, because Greg Walden is a right-wing toad. But all 4 of the Democrats from Oregon, Peter DeFazio, you heard on the show yesterday, and Earl Blumenauer and David Wu and Darlene Hooley, all 4 of them voted no. So if you're listening, God bless you. Good on you. Thank you. And as I said, I will be sure to call Darlene Hooley's office when I get off the air and thank her. And I hope that if your member of Congress is on this list as voting no, that you will call them, thank them, and make a contribution to their next campaign, because they're going to need it. They're going to need it. You know, one of the main speculative reasons why Democrats would even go along with this is that they're afraid that in the fall, the campaigns against them are going to be, did you know that your member of Congress voted to help the terrorists by keeping tools out of the hands of George W. or some kind of nonsense like that? And odds are it will. So, you know, you can give, what is it, $2,200 a year, $2,300, I don't know, whatever the limit is. $20 is a big deal if a lot of people do it. $10 is a big deal. $50 is huge. Give some money to your member of Congress. Do it. Jim in Flint, Michigan. Hey, Jim.
Hi, Tom. I appreciate you taking my call. How are you today?
I'm well. What's
good.
Up?
You're as angry as I think the rest of us. Just wanted to let you know what I try to do. I called my congressman yesterday, Dale Kildee, here in Michigan, 3 times. I was told I needed to speak with a particular individual who was out to lunch, and then he was at other places. I called again this morning and finally reached him, spent half an hour on the phone with a very calm discussion explaining why.
With your congressman?
No. No,
oh, okay. With the staff member.
One of the staff members. I asked if I could speak with the congressman. At the end of the conversation, I made a specific request and gave him, you know, both phone numbers that I have, saying I want to speak with him whenever that might be, whether it's, you know, today, next week, whatever. I wanted to speak with him.
Right.
Anyhow, when I spoke with this individual, he was very evasive. He's saying that the congressman really hasn't made up his mind yet, or he's not sure what he's going to do. And, you know,
you don't know if the Fourth Amendment is really important to keep or not.
Exactly.
You know, it's just, it's anyhow, one of those things, you kind of think about it at the last minute. It's sort of like, you know, you go into a pizza parlor and, you know, which kind of pizza is it going to be today? I don't know. I'll think about it when I look at it.
Exactly. Well, my real reason for calling is I was curious as to what the Democratic leadership did as far as the roll call is concerned. And I did a printout of the leadership. There are 17 members of that, and out of those 17, the top 4, Nancy Pelosi, Steny Hoyer, Jim Clyburn, and Rahm Emanuel all voted yes.
Yep.
And 3 of the others also voted yes. All the remaining 10 voted no. And those no's include George Miller and Debbie Wasserman Schultz and Maxine Waters, amongst others.
Mm-hmm.
Even John Lewis voted no.
Right.
And you would expect
and we
to
need to
no.
thank them and honor them for that.
Exactly. But, I mean, this is just absolutely disgusting that, I mean, more than 100 of the Democrats, so-called. It's a bad black letter day in America.
It is. It is a true tragedy for this republic, and it's a reminder to all of us that we have to get involved. We have to get out there and get active. We have to participate. We can't just sit back and, you know, voting is not enough. Jim,
no.
Jim, thank you for your call.
Thanks, Tom.
And thank you for your patriotism. I mean, calling your member of Congress. And I'm sorry to hear that Congressman Kildee wimped out on the U.S. Constitution, shall we say. Bernice in Dearborn, Michigan. Hey, Bernice.
Hi, Tom. I called John Dingell's office in Washington.
Your congressman.
My congressman for Dearborn.
he voted against immunity.
God bless him.
So I said to his staff member, please tell him, I said, thank you, and that I would support him.
Great. And one of the things that you can ask when you're on the phone, because usually they can't accept contributions on their official website, so they'll have a campaign website, is where's the website where I can go and give you some money?
Well, he has an office in Dearborn, and I'm going to be volunteering there.
Oh, great. Great. Good. Your good judgment has been validated. Bernice, thank you very much for the call, and thanks for listening on WDTW. It's Alberto in Miami Beach. Hey, Alberto.
Hey, Tom.
What's up?
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Tom, I'm very, very worried about Nancy Pelosi. All of a sudden, she seems like to be like the female version of Joseph Lieberman.
Oh, Alberto, seriously, it's nowhere near that bad. I mean, this is bad, but it's nowhere near as bad as Joe Lieberman. Joe Lieberman is going to give a speech at the Republican convention, you know.
Every time I see her, it seems like she's becoming like Dick Cheney. She doesn't even care about the issues, whether somebody complains or not.
Now, Alberto, come on. Nancy Pelosi has done a lot of good, and she's accomplished a lot legislatively. She failed on this vote, and she has failed on impeachment. But let's not turn everybody into all one thing or all the other. Let's acknowledge that there's complexity here.
Oh, she has, definitely, but I said lately, she's like, you know, forgetting what she's standing for.
Yeah.
And I hope every Californian call her, and I predict she's going to lose next time around. She's acting irrational lately.
Yeah.
Really.
Okay, thank you, Alberto. I agree that she should be pressured, she should be held to account, and that her constituents in San Francisco should be calling her. I don't think that she's going to lose the election. And like I said, I think that in many ways she's done a very good job. This is not one of them.
Tom Hartman.
Exposing the con in conservative.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Your home for truth in broadcasting.
Now, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to Anything Goes Friday. Here on the Tom Hartman Program, the place where you will not hear suck-up interviews with big-name politicians or so-called news stars. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. We'll hear from you. Mark in Ripon, Wisconsin. Hey, Mark, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. Well, I too, like everybody else in the United States, is disappointed by this compromise on this FISA vote. I was disappointed with the words, the first statement that Russ Feingold had said in his statement last night, issuing that about a capitulation. And basically, capitulation means surrendering or giving up.
Right. And for our listeners who don't know what you're talking about, Russ Feingold last night said this bill, this piece of legislation, is not a compromise, as the Democrats and Republicans and the news media, the complicit corporate news media, are calling it. It is not. These are my words, not Russ Feingold's. So I'll get back to his quote in just a second. But this is just mind-boggling how they're just using this language. Anyhow, what Russ Feingold said last night was this piece of legislation is not a compromise. It is a capitulation.
And that essentially tells me he gave up. And they gave up on this. They gave up.
Well, he didn't give up. He intends to vote against it.
Well, I hope that's true. I really hope.
And I hope I hope he puts a hold on it to at least delay it for another 3 days.
But I'm disappointed with this speaker, this lady speaker of the House, Pelosi. I think her and everybody else in the House.
Mark, there are male speakers who have been every bit as whatever on particular issues.
Well,
this has nothing to do with gender.
Essentially, I think they have sold out to the special interest money. These are
could be. I mean, here's the question, Mark. One of three things is going on, and I've heard all three theories bounced around. Either one, As Ellen Ratner said yesterday, I don't know if she used the phrase carpet bombed, but that's the visual I have in my mind, that the special interests are passing out money in Washington, D.C. like it's Christmas,
right.
Number one. That's one possibility. A second possibility is that the Democrats who voted yes, particularly the Democratic leadership who are pushing this thing through, are concerned, and this is something that one of the guests on Keith Olbermann's show last night raised, one of the possibilities. I think it was Jonathan Turley, his constitutional scholar, mm-hmm. that perhaps there are Democrats who were complicit in the original crimes, and they would just assume there never be investigations of this because they don't want their own complicity to come out. That's possibility number two. And possibility number three is that they're just terrified that the Republicans are going to use this against them in November. Frankly, that number three possibility, I don't think is all that strong. I don't think that that's really what's going on. I think it's either one or two or a combination of the two.
Right, right. And I can see, and as I told the receptionist I called, I said they have sort of prostituted themselves to the special interests. And
or they're scared to death.
Right. And I can see exactly, and I agree wholeheartedly with Barack Obama, who I plan on voting for. Whether my vote counts, I hope it does.
Yeah.
After the last election, I don't know. But anyways, you know, he's raised millions of dollars. I think you said he's raised $272 million.
No, I didn't say that. I don't know the amount of money that he's raised so far.
Well, compared to McCain, and McCain is sniveling now because he's saying he went back on his written word. Well, who cares? McCain.
Well, besides that, he did not go back on his written word, as Keith Olbermann pointed out last night, although I thought it was real interesting to watch Chris Matthews spin it that way for a whole hour.
Well, right.
Basically what Obama had said back in the day is that if these guys are going to stop, if we can come together, if we can agree. He said, I'm willing to sit down with the Republican nominee and work out a framework whereby there won't be money. I'm paraphrasing now, whereby there won't be money going to 527s and they won't be participating. There won't be all these external sources of revenue. The parties won't be throwing unlimited money in. And then we'll simply do this race based on equal amounts of federal matching funds.
Right.
Now, McCain has said, no way. My 527s are going to raise hundreds of millions of dollars, and we're going to carpet bomb you guys. So there's that phrase again. I must be having Vietnam flashback, although I didn't serve in the military, but, the era. But it's mind-boggling.
It really is. And, I'm still trying to figure out this entire thing, and I sincerely hope the Senate has a little bit more background.
Yeah.
And I think these people that voted yes, and I'll use an anatomical vote, their sphincters are getting a little bit tighter.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. They're afraid of something, and the question is, what are they afraid of? Mark, thanks a lot for the call. Jim in Lexington, South Carolina, you want to disagree with me? You think
yes.
FISA is good?
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Comrade, how are things in Moscow?
it's in Moscow where they wiretap you without a court order. So that would be what the Republicans want.
And they're doing that here also.
That's right, and that's what the Republicans want, Jim.
And again, what I'm thinking about is this, is the fact that since 2001 we haven't been hit. I don't know what the answer is, but I suspect...
We weren't hit before 2001 either, Jim.
Pardon me?
We weren't hit before 2001 either.
Oh, the cold, the U.S. cold, the embassy in Kenya.
Okay, well, by those standards, Jim, we have been hit terribly since 2001. Over 4,000 Americans have been hit and have died. More than died in the World Trade Center. More than died in all of the actions on 9/11. We have been hit horribly since 9/11 as a result of the way that George Bush responded to that.
You're getting excited now, and all I can tell you is that the Democrats have funded this war, okay? So you can't make it George Bush's war. You have to also make it the Democrat and the Republicans' war.
You're right.
Okay. Now, excuse me, I'm on the phone, John. I'm sorry, my grandson is here.
That's okay.
The other thing is that you're talking about the special interest money.
Yeah.
Okay, and Obama just turned away from I'm getting away from my point about FISA, but there's so much running through my mind here right now. Can I digress a little bit?
Yeah.
All right. Thanks. Good.
Some Republican talking points you want to share with us?
Say it again.
Yeah, go for it, Jim.
All right. Again, with Obama here, I really don't know what to make of this fella here, right? I'm not going to vote for him. I'm not going to vote for McCain. And the reason I'm not going to vote for McCain is because I, too, served in Vietnam. And McCain served in Vietnam. But I also believe that McCain is a loose cannon. I really believe he's a loose cannon. And I don't want McCain to be in that position where he's going to get annoyed at somebody or some country, and he's just going to go off the...
So who are you going to vote for, Jim?
I don't know who the third party is, but, I mean, I've been voting...
Well, you've got the Libertarian. You've got Bob Barr.
Pardon me?
Bob Barr is the Libertarian Party's candidate.
Yeah,
he's probably the most... And he's a good,
too,
good solid conservative.
But the third party candidate has no chance at all. Even if he won tomorrow, he doesn't have a party to lead. Whoever becomes president, be it a Democrat or Republican, becomes the party leader.
Yeah.
So I'm in a quandary right now. I really don't know which way to go.
Here's a suggestion for you, Jim. You hold, I'm assuming, a worldview, a set of values, a perspective that is relatively coherent and consistent. In other words, you have some understanding of politics. You and I may disagree on many of these things, but you are politically conscious, right?
I try to be, yes.
Okay. So why don't you show up at a Democratic Party meeting or a Republican Party meeting, and probably in your case, Republican Party would be a better recommendation, but why don't you show up at a party meeting and say, hey, I'm here. I don't like the way things are going. I'm worried about John McCain. I'd like to get active.
And again, and I understand that. I'm in Joe Wilson's district here, okay? Joe Wilson was in the primary. I voted against Joe Wilson, okay?
Joe Wilson
also
is the
voted,
was
voted
the Republican?
Against Lindsey Graham. And I wrote a letter to DeMint, Jim DeMint, and I sent copies to, if I have a moment, I sent
copies. We have 30 seconds, Jim.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
I told him why I wasn't voting Republican this fall, because I am up to here with the way the deficit has increased, the way the budget has increased, the way entitlements is 54% of the budget, where nobody in Washington can do anything.
Jim, you're a principled Republican. I salute you, and I strongly encourage you to take back your party.
Well, you know, I'll tell you what. I would like to, and I there were a lot of people down here.
Show up there. Yeah, show up at those party meetings. I mean, when I was a kid, my dad used to take me to Republican Party meetings. I know they have them. Jim, thanks a lot for the call. I'm sorry, we got to take a break here, but I appreciate your listening, and I appreciate your passion. And let me tell you, I salute principled Republicans. Take back your party if you believe in the values of this country. 16 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
The Tom Hartman Program, your radio support group for We the People.
Seem to be rather preoccupied with the selling out of the Fourth Amendment, but, you know, that said, anything you want to call about, be glad to take your call. But first, strange stuff going on out there in the world. Well, maybe. This is these viral emails about Barack Obama. Here's the most recent one I got. This is just incredible. There are many things people do not know about Barack Obama. This came, you know, CC'd to like 800 people. There are many things people do not know about Barack Obama. It is every American's duty to read this message and pass it along to all of their friends and loved ones. Barack Obama wears a flag pin at all times, even in the shower. Barack Obama says the Pledge of Allegiance every time he sees an American flag. He also ends every sentence by saying, "With liberty and justice for all." Click here for video of Obama quietly mouthing the Pledge of Allegiance in his sleep. A tape exists of Michelle Obama saying the Pledge of Allegiance at a conference on patriotism. Every weekend, Barack and Michelle take their daughters hunting. Barack Obama is a patriotic American. He has had one hand over his heart at all times. He occasionally switches when one arm gets tired, which is almost never because he is so strong. Barack Obama has the Declaration of Independence tattooed on his stomach. It's upside down so he can read it while doing sit-ups. There's only one artist on Barack Obama's iPod, Francis Scott Key. Barack Obama is a devout Christian. His favorite book is the Bible, which he has memorized. His name means he who loves Jesus in the ancient language of Aramaic. He is proud that Jesus was an American. Barack Obama goes to church every morning. He goes to church every afternoon. He goes to church every evening. He's in church right now. Barack Obama's new airplane includes a conference room, a kitchen, and a megachurch. Barack Obama's skin is the color of American soil. Barack Obama buys American stuff. He owns a Ford, a baseball team, and a computer he built himself from American parts. He travels mostly by forklift. Barack Obama says that Americans cling to gun and religions because they are awesome. In Christopher Beam's article, The Truth About Barack Obama. How can they say such things? 1-866-303-2270. Oh, my, oh, my, oh, my. Michelle in Seattle. Hey, Michelle, what's up? Michelle? No, Michelle. Ned in Pasadena, California. Ned, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. I really want to thank you for, you know, giving the information out on the FISA bill and so many of the things that you do. I did call my congressman, Adam Schiff of Pasadena and Glendale in California, and unfortunately found out that he supported this terrible piece of legislation. And before I could hear how he voted, the person who answered the phone started reading me what must be Mr. Schiff's press release justifying his vote.
Mm-hmm.
And included in that justification, he said there were things that he didn't like, which he didn't specify, voted for it anyway because he felt, among other things, that it provided some significant protections for civil liberties.
Oh, man. This is worse than that Republican down in Texas who's doing the fundraiser for John McCain's comments about rape. That's absolutely incredible. Schiff voted for it because it protects our civil liberties by giving away the Fourth Amendment, by cutting the guts out of the Fourth Amendment.
It just seems to me that, you know, it's very much like the way Mr. Bush uses language, where he will call something by a rosy sounding name and stick to that description, assuming that no one will check up on the details.
Yeah. Yeah, and the fact of the matter is we are checking on the details. Ned, thanks for the call, and thanks for calling your member of Congress. It's good on you. Victor in Orange County, California. Hey, Victor. Victor? No Victor. Okay. How about Ed in Livonia, Michigan? Hey, Ed. You're on the air.
Hey, Tom. How are you?
Great
program. Enjoy listening to you. I've got just a couple of quick comments I want to make, not so much on the FISA bill, which was totally absurd. But I heard something kind of interesting last week on ABC. They had a thing about the military vote for all our military personnel that are overseas.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted you to check into this and see if we can get some kind of a movement going, because they said that because they're going to vote absentee, that all the ballots may not make it back into the U.S. for the elections.
And where did you hear this?
They're talking like 100,000 votes.
Right. I've heard, you know, rumors like that. I've heard stories like that. I've never, to the best of my knowledge, seen a solid news story or even a solid blog post.
Well, I think they're trying to suppress it because they don't want it to get out or want people to do something that would affect the vote.
Yeah.
But I think this is totally absurd. And as far as the oil companies are concerned, we, the taxpayers of the United States, are paying and having our servicemen go over there and fight the war for these corporate greeds over there taking over the oil. Are they going to get
with a no-bid contract?
The what?
With a no-bid contract.
Yeah, and are they going to give us a cut or a break on our gas when they go over there for us and fight because we're supplying them and protecting them while they're there? This is totally unbelievably absurd.
Yeah, well said. This is the Cheney energy policy, Ed. You know, as I said, I've said many times, we're actually paying $10 a gallon for gasoline just like the Europeans are. We're paying $10 a gallon for gasoline because it's $4 at the pump, $4 in your taxes paying for the military to protect the oil pipelines and fight the wars necessary to secure our oil, and $2 for the cost of all the cancers caused by all those tailpipe emissions. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Watch on this heart of mine. I keep my eyes wide open all the time. I keep the ends out for the tie that binds. Because you're mine, I walk the line.
34 minutes past the hour. Our program brought to you in part by the Teamsters, fighting to stop the unfair trade deal with Colombia. You can find out more at Teamster.org. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. Ken in Cupertino, California. Hey, Ken, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I got two things to say. First, I just had an experience with Nancy Pelosi's phone operators.
Are you in her district? Are you a constituent?
I live down the peninsula from San Francisco, so I can't vote for her per se, but I'm around and I'm involved at the Peninsula
right.
Democrats.
And as the speaker, by the way, she is. We are all her constituents.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So anyway, I follow your lead on a lot of this stuff. So I've gotten involved with my local Democratic Party. I do as much as I possibly can from my level without actually running for office.
Yeah.
And I'm outraged. I mean, I'm incensed. I'm outraged. I'm feeling a lot of the emotions that a lot of people are feeling at this moment in time. But I want you to understand that yesterday I called not only her office but Anna Eshoo's office. Anna Eshoo voted correctly today as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm.
Nancy Pelosi did not. What I don't understand is, and I want the answer to the question, why? Why did they change their perspective? And that's all I was calling. And I was very respectful. And I was shut down. First of all, I was put on hold three times. Mm-hmm. And then they put me into some sort of electronic recording trap that I couldn't get out of. So that was the experience I had with the Speaker of the House. They redirected me to their website that does not have the answer to the question why she changed her mind. So I'm a little outraged with that.
Right.
But the other thing I just wanted to explain is that every time I seem to do these things, go on, I'm wondering if other people have this experience, call my congresspeople. Get involved, write letters, write campaign checks, withhold campaign checks. It doesn't seem to work. So I'm wondering if we're left off doing nothing. You know?
Well, no, it is working. The Democratic Party has moved pretty dramatically in the last 4, 5, 6 years in a more progressive direction than they certainly were during the Bill Clinton administration when we got NAFTA and GATT and the end of welfare as we know it and the downsizing of government and the ongoing globalization of everything and which is not to say that nothing good came out of Clinton's administration. Certainly balancing the budget was a good step, and raising progressive taxes was a good step, but nonetheless, I think there has been some positive motion. I wouldn't give up. I mean,
I'm too much of a fighter to give up, Tom. But I got to tell you, it's a little discouraging when we're this close to winning the next presidential election to have something like this happen. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Perhaps the Senate can step forward. I know we should be calling for Barack Obama to be the leader that he is now.
I agree.
And step forward with that. So
we should ask if Barack Obama was to come out and say, as the titular leader, theoretical leader, whatever, I don't know what the appropriate word is. I guess it wouldn't be de facto, but in any case, as the guy who is perceived as the head Democrat in America right now, since he's going to be the nominee for president, if he would come out and say this piece of legislation has to be stopped in the Senate, if he would just say that, then in all probability it would be, and that would be such a great thing. And so maybe our lobbying efforts right now should be directed toward Barack Obama.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And you can certainly call his Senate office. You go to callcongress.org and call the 800 number and just let them know that we'd like to see some leadership out of Barack Obama on this.
Marcos from the Daily Coast is fond of saying, In the past, we needed more Democrats. Now we need the right kind of Democrats.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. It's absolutely true. Ken, thanks a lot for the call.
Hey, you're welcome.
Yeah, good, well said. I mean, it is so absolutely true. Jerry in Lansing, Michigan. Hey, Jerry.
Yeah, hi, Tom. How you doing?
Just great. What's up?
Well,
thank you for calling from my hometown.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I too am very disgruntled with our political system, and
I'm not disgruntled with it. I'm disgruntled with this vote, and I acknowledge that our system is badly broken, and a large part of what's broken it is money.
Well, yeah, and I think it's become all too apparent that what we're dealing with, in my opinion, is a rogue government that's abandoned the rule of law and our Constitution. And
yes,
we are allowing them to subjugate the people's interest to their true constituents, the corporations, special interest, and, of course, their own greed. Mm-hmm. And there's a guiding force in this government which is controlling it all, and, of course, that's money.
Yeah.
And I think what we have to do, Tom, I think, is language is important. Your whole life is language. And we all understand who are politically involved, the importance and the effect of language. And I think that the contributions that are contributed to our representatives, we keep calling them political contributions. We need to start calling them bribes. I mean, that's what they really are. Let's get it out on the table and really talk about it.
It's a bribe when you give money to somebody in exchange for a particular action. It is support when you give money to somebody because broadly you support their worldview.
Okay,
if I give money to a politician because they have said that they will do something that's going to increase the value of my particular business or home, that's a bribe. And that's what's going on. That's what's legal. It's called lobbying in the United States.
Right.
And it's legalized bribery.
Tom, you can use any language you want. The right uses all, I mean, they label people elite and whatever. You can call it whatever you want, okay? And if you're not going to dance around language or what's supposed to has happened, but we all know that in reality, as Charles Keating said when they asked him, did he think that his contributions affected any votes, and his answer was, I certainly hope so.
Right. You have to ask yourself, why is somebody going to write a check for 5, 6, 7 figures, to a party or to a 527 or to a candidate?
You don't have to ask. We all know. So let's quit this linguistic gymnastics, which is actually a joke, and start calling it what it is. Raise the consciousness level and maybe actually start jabbing our political representatives to have to address this.
Yeah, amen, Jerry. I mean, that was the idea of McCain-Feingold and putting a campaign cap of 22
but that's
or
still not getting it out there. That's
no, I agree. It's highly important.
Can I read something though, real quick?
Can you what?
If we simply accept this and do nothing, I'm talking about FISA.
Right.
We will never change the system, and we will get the best democracy money can buy. And the government we deserve.
Yeah, well, we already have that, Jerry, and that's the tragedy. And actually, I would not say, and thank you for the call, I would not say we have the government we deserve. We deserve better. And we are actively and aggressively in the process of getting better. But there are forces at work in this country that you have to acknowledge, and around the world, sociopathic forces, non-human forces, corporate forces, that have corrupted our political system, and that I think if Thomas Jefferson was alive today, there would be tears in his eyes every single day. I mean, it is that bad. Michael in Los Angeles. Hey, Michael.
Yes, hi, Tom. I really appreciate what you're doing on all this, and I wrote and called everybody,
mm-hmm.
Waxman, Boxer, and Feinstein. But I wanted to say, in my business, in my home, I have about 50 phone numbers probably with AT&T.
Mm-hmm.
Including a cell phone and everything. And I don't know, I wanted your opinion. I don't like Bill O'Reilly type tactics, but I seriously am considering changing companies right now and making the point to AT&T that I am doing it for this reason. And I wanted to know if you agree.
I don't disagree. I think it's, consumer action is always a fine thing. Where I get hung up is when people come along and say, oh, you need to vote with your dollars. Well, a lot of people who, for example, the only thing that they can afford to buy is what's at Walmart, or that's the only store that is near them, or what, they can't vote with their dollars. But if you have the option, and the opportunity, certainly making a statement, whether it's AT&T or any other company, I'll tell you, I think, the cell phone service that I have is with Virgin Mobile, because I don't want to sign a contract, and it's month to month, and it works just fine for me.
I think I'm going to do it, and I'd like to encourage your listeners, if they have AT&T or any of the companies listed as being the troublemakers, I would like to encourage them to do the same.
Yeah. Thank you, Michael. Thanks for the call. I I'm not calling for a boycott, and I think it's important that we not only let our elected representatives know what we think about their behavior, but, the corporations with whom we interact, we can let them know. Although the frank problem is, and we have to acknowledge this, is that in many cases they absolutely have us by the throat. I mean, there's just no way around it. They have us by the throat. And that's where we, again, need to go back to the political arena and say, enough already. We're not going to, we want the monopolies broken up. Like Jimmy Carter breaking up AT&T. We want the Sherman Antitrust Act enforced once again. And I've written several books that deal at length with this topic. One is called We the People, which I think is one of the most accessible, and it's actually very, very intensely packed with information. And the other is called Unequal Protection, about the rise of corporate dominance in America. And these are issues that we really need to be talking about and talking to each other about and talking to our politicians about and talking to the media about and pushing back on corporate power in America. Next week we'll be doing our show from Denmark, by the way, just apropos of this, and talking about these kind of issues. How do they handle this in other countries? 45 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, thanks so much to Louise Hartman, to the world's greatest radio program producer, Sean Taylor, to Chris Rosen and Lauren Kirshner, the world's greatest board ops and call screeners and all-around helpers, and Marcus Hillman at Air America, at Sue Nethercutt, and the folks in our chat room, Sue, who does so much on our website, and Mike Toth, who does our audio archives on our website, listens to the show, does just a marvelous job of editing it down, to our affiliates, all the radio stations that carry us, and particularly those who carry us live so that your listeners can interact. Thank you for that. To our sponsors, and to you for listening to our program. Much appreciated. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, Talk Radio News on the line. Hey, Ellen.
I'll tell you, I sat this morning. I didn't sit for the whole hearing because I had to do some stations this afternoon, but I sat for this morning part of the Scott McClellan hearing in the hearing room, and actually spoke to Scott afterwards. He was very relaxed for Scott. I think he's pretty centered in everything. The Republicans tried to say, well, this is our first book of the month club for somebody. I mean, they were just being completely ridiculous.
Yeah.
It was amazing that Scott said that he did not implicate the president. He was asked very specifically by Jerry Nadler of New York whether he implicated the president in this, and he said he had no indication that the president was involved. However, Conyers put
this
up...
This being, Ellen, if I may interrupt you, this that you're talking about is the outing of Valerie Plame?
This is the outing of Valerie Plame.
Okay, pardon me.
He did say that, given what he knew, a Scooter Libby's line may have involved the vice president, and Conyers put up some handwritten notes that the vice president made, which seemed to look as if he had talked to the president.
Mm-hmm.
But again, There was absolutely nothing that put him there. And Conyers did say that he was not sure that there was sufficient evidence to proceed to an impeachment of the President of the United States,
right.
But he kind of wondered out loud.
Because there was no John Dean moment here. I mean, John Dean actually had a meeting with Richard Nixon and talked about that meeting and said that he had confronted Nixon with the crimes, and Nixon had essentially said, you know, and said, sir, there's a cancer in the presidency, and Nixon had basically said, keep covering it up, buddy. And apparently Scott McClellan was not inner to the inner circle, but I mean, John Dean was Nixon's lawyer. Scott McClellan is just the mouthpiece, so he, you know, you wouldn't expect him to be on the inside like that.
And the Republicans went after him, saying he wasn't really on the inside, so how could he know what he's talking about?
Right. Yeah, I heard part of that this morning before we went on the air, and in fact, the one guy, the first guy who questioned him, I'm not sure I ever did get his name, but it was obvious that it was a Republican because he would ask him, he'd say, you didn't actually hear that, and Scott would try to explain, and he kept interrupting him over and over and over again.
It was a typical Republican sort of trying to get as many words as you can so that the witness can't talk.
Right, and a prosecutorial approach. We saw today as Jonathan Turley last night said on Keith Olbermann's show Countdown, he said this changes to the FISA law, this offering immunity to the telco companies, which has to have them thinking now, hey, next is net neutrality, you know, we own Congress, that this is the evisceration, the disemboweling of the Fourth Amendment.
I think so, and Steny Hoyer, Nadler was very forceful on this. Steny Hoyer said that this wasn't perfect. He said that the FISA law mandated for the first time a robust accounting by the inspectors general, but they absolutely said that there was that was an imperfect law and that compromises had to be made. And you know, when the president issued a statement today about this, that you have situation, if the president says this is good that it passed, it's not good that it passed.
In fact, Mr. Udall today,
193 to 129, the Senate will vote on it next week.
Right, so call your senators right now. Tom Udall, Trevor in the chat room, he says Udall's speech today or statement, or I'm not sure where this came from, but this is from Tom Udall. Today's vote was not easy. I stood up to leaders of my own party and voted against this bill because I took an oath to defend Americans and our Constitution, and it was the right thing to do. We really need to honor the 129 Democrats, 128 Democrats and the one Republican who had the courage to do what was right for America.
I agree. And the ACLU issued a statement today saying it's Christmas morning at the White House.
Right. I read it to my listeners.
Oh, okay. So I'm not telling you anything you didn't, but I thought that was a great line.
Yeah.
And the president today is in Florida. He's raising money. Next week he's going to do some international meetings. And then, of course, today he made his statement on the FISA law. Not pretty.
Yeah. Now, you know, both John McCain and George W. Bush visited the Iowa, Illinois, you know, the area where this disaster is going on, and in both cases pulled hundreds of police officers away from the work that then and other helpers away from the work that they were otherwise doing. Barack Obama, the request went out from these regions, please don't visit because we're busy. Obama said, fine, I'll stay away until you've got your act together. Bush and McCain both said, tough luck, I'm going to show up and have my photo op.
Yeah, you and I disagree a little bit about that. I actually think, yes, it does pull people away. On the other hand, I don't think these guys really understand the impact of something until they're there. And so I actually wrote a column that has the opposite side of your viewpoint. I think
Oh, really?
They actually should go there.
But even when the locals say, please don't come?
Well, you know, do a short flyover that doesn't involve a lot of people. See the damage. I mean, two of our staff members took a two-hour plane trip just in a small plane to survey the damage.
Yeah, see, that's a more appropriate way to do it. But anyhow, we're out of time. So, Ellen Radner, talkradionews.com. You can read her op-ed there. Hey, Ellen, thank you so much for dropping by.
Thank you.
Good talking with you. Coming up Monday. Hejme venner. I think that's hello, my friends in Danish. We're broadcasting live from Copenhagen, Denmark, all week to find out why Denmark is the happiest place in the world. Plus, we'll find out how democratic socialism can help build a middle class and what lessons Americans can learn from the Danes. And don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. Activism begins with you. Get out there. Get active. Tag, you're it. Have a great weekend. We'll see you Monday. From Europe.
You are listening to Tom Hartman.
For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit HartmanRadio.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.